As I say, I can really relate to a lot of this. It's a personal thing with me. It's not academic. I mean, it is academic. I want to understand it and be scientific and research stuff and help people clinically. But within me, I just resonate to it. And part of the reason I resonate to it is I was raised in a sense, in a very mystical tradition. I was raised in the Church of God, fundamental Christianity. Church of God is, you know, it's about that far from Pentecostal. It's pretty charismatic. We were charismatic before charismatic was popular. I mean, you know, charismatic, we were on the wrong side of the tracks if you were doing the charismatic stuff back in the 50s and 60s, if you know what I mean. And laying on of hands and psychic phenomena, although it wasn't called that. It was called, you know, God, you know, through your dreams and stuff. My grandfather was a big dreamer and believed in prophecy and dreams and that sort of stuff, and miracles. See, that's all stuff that's unreal from a scientific standpoint. So they were already kind of psychotic in terms of that background says there's more to physical reality and we can have a personal relationship with it. I went away to college and threw the baby out with the bathwater, so to speak. Became, you know, threw that stuff away and kind of reformatted my hard drive, so to speak, wiped it clean, and said, I'm just going to create myself from scratch here. I'm only believe what I believe to find to be real because I don't find that stuff very real. And so I went about that way, being very sort of scientific, materialistic for a period of my life. Kind of, and I look back as sort of a gray area of my life for a few years. Got married, started a business, a construction business, which I had for a long time. And after a few years, I had a strange experience. I'd pull out of my driveway to go into construction sites where I was working at the time, and I'd start down the road, and for the first couple of miles, I'd start having these really negative, horrendous thoughts. Dark, foreboding thoughts. That something terrible was going to happen, and that it would be a test, and I would need to know, you know, I would find out who I really am. Not quite a voice, but almost a voice. But just annoying thoughts coming in. I'd get past that 2 or 3 miles, and it'd go away, and I wouldn't have any more. I'd come back home about that same stretch of road in the evening. There it is again. This went on for several days. And I had lived sort of a charmed life in a way. I was the oldest grandchild. I'd never been to a funeral. I'd never seen a dead person. And I was, and part of the thoughts that I was getting from this, you know, you've had sort of like Buddha, you know, he was raised and they pulled the sick people out of his way so he'd never see them. You know, and until at one point he sees a sick person, it completely changes his life in terms of what you think life is about. And that's the kind of, that's what was in my mind. Something's going to happen of that nature, and it's going to completely change how you look at life, and you better be ready for it. And the only thing I could think of was that one of my brothers was going to die. I have 4 brothers, and that suddenly one of them would die in an accident. You know, like, the thought occurred to me, hey, any of us is going to, could check out at any time, and just by the statistical odds, something like that is going to happen. Sometime in my life it has to, just, you know, even from a materialistic standpoint. So after a few days of this, basically what happened was my house burned down. And when I was coming home one day, about that point in the road where I was having those thoughts, there was cars parked. And it was a dangerous place in the road. It was on a hill. And I was thinking, what are cars parked here? And I go over the hill and up the long driveway back into the woods where our house was. And there's cars all the way back up there. And I get up there and there's a fire truck. And people are standing around, and they hadn't been able to contact me because I was out away from the phone. That was back before the cellular phone days. And the house had burned down, a new house, only a couple months old, had burned down. And the short-term effect was, of course, I had to get resituated, but basically I started having all kinds of mystical experiences. See, I didn't do anything to precipitate this. I had a precognitive experience, so I could really relate to this, the woman that was hearing the voice. The voice told her what was going to happen. Because I started having precognitive experiences, I started having dreams where I would have a dream, wake up in a cold sweat, go back to sleep, have exactly the same dream, wake up in a cold sweat again, go to work, have the day completely different than what I thought it was going to be, what my plan was, but yet in the midst of the day, the dream happens just like the dream. And I realizing that this is the dream is unfolding and I'm in it right here. This is reality, not just a dream. And how does that happen? How does some part of me know that? See, I had to retake on what reality is, what is real, and that maybe some of these things that I dismissed, maybe there's something to it. And about 2 months before my house burned down, I found my first Edgar Cayce book. I mean, it found me. I was going to an old bookstore, and it kind of fell off the shelf in my hand. You know those kind of experiences you have. For some reason, I bought it because it looked familiar to me, and I thought I ought to read it. And it was just an awakening of all sorts. And so I start having out-of-body experiences spontaneously. I'm not doing anything to precipitate any of this, and I'd never taken drugs. You know, there's nothing to account for it. I started having synesthesia, where you listen to music or something, and you're having all kinds of other manifestations of it, mystical, psychic manifestations of what the music really means and how it ties everything together in the universe. That's one of the qualities of mysticism. You get a sense of being connected with everything and with the higher source of direct connection. So I'm having these kinds of experiences over a period of a couple years, off and on, spontaneously. Study everything that I can, including the Casey material. I keep coming back to the Casey material because of something about it. And the physical part of it, I think I found there kind of made sense to me from a scientific standpoint. Even at that point, I could relate to it, and it sounded real. So that kind of drew me in as well. At a certain point, I had an experience, my first Kundalini experience that was conscious. I was lying in bed. It was probably 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning. I'm lying on my back. And as I start to get conscious, and I realize that I'm floating above my body, kind of undulating, and there's flashing lights. And as the lights are flashing, the colors are more brilliant and beautiful than anything in the material world. And I become aware of this intense sexual ecstasy. And the thought enters my mind, this is Kundalini. And I remember what Edgar Casey said in one of his readings. He said, this Kundalini energy is, it's so intense that that's how the yogis and some of the great mystical teachers of the East are able to be celibate. Because, hey, if you've got this energy, who needs sex? You know? And it occurred to me, that's what he's talking about. Wow, he was right. This is really something. And then the thought entered my mind, I wonder how long I can keep this up. And right back down in my body, it's over. And not long after that, I went to a conference where there was a Native American, well, let's say a self-professed Native American shaman, whether that's, you know, whether he's a shaman or not, I don't know. But he said, oh, yeah, you were just getting ready to project out of body. We all do it every night. We all go out of our bodies. And, you know, Casey said that, too. He said, we all leave our bodies at night. And he said that this Kundalini comes up and projects you out of body, and that's how it happens. And there's a whole physiology behind that. It's in the REM cycle of sleep, and there's very fascinating explanation for how that happens, but I can't go into that. My next Kundalini experience was actually probably a couple years after that. I had started doing this 2 o'clock in the morning meditation that Edgar Casey recommended and some of the other teachers have recommended. It says the mental atmosphere is calmer. Well, it is at 2 o'clock in the morning where you are, it's calmer because everybody's asleep. On the other side of the world, it's really going like crazy, but where you are, it's calmer. And the ions are probably different in the atmosphere and all these sorts of things. So I started doing that. And being in construction, particularly in the winter in Illinois where I was living, it ground freezes and gets real cold. A lot of times you can go for periods of time without working. So I could do that 2 o'clock meditation and take a nap in the afternoon and have mystical experiences all, you know, all through the whole cycle. It was really a fascinating sort of thing. Remember a lot of dreams. But I never had, during meditation, it would just sit there for 45 minutes with my tape going, my meditation tape, music, entering the silence. You know, prayer is talking to God, meditating is listening to God. So I'd sit there and listen. And this went on for, you know, 3 or 4 years probably, off and on of doing this kind of practice. And then one night when I went back to bed after my 2 o'clock meditation, I was lying there on my right side in bed, and I felt this energy coming up the spine. And it was like a static electricity starting at the base of the spine. And as it kept coming up, it increased in its intensity and volume to it was almost like a thunder or a roar. And the Revelation there talks about earthquakes and thundering when it's talking about this process. And I could relate to that. But at the time, what it felt to me like was sort of like the space shuttle taking off. You know how the space shuttle or rocket ship, that roar, and then it slowly comes up. And as it gets up more, it picks up speed. And this was coming up my spine like that, static electricity and this roaring as it comes up my spine. And it was a pretty frightening sort of thing, actually. I mean, it's very powerful. And it was completely out of my control. There was nothing I could do about any of this. It was happening to me, and someone was telling me about this. Someone was telling me about their experience with this during the break, similar kind of process. Came up, and I knew what it was. I'd read the books. I knew it was Kundalini Awakening. I knew that it was going to change me, and I wouldn't be the same. I knew when it got up here, something was going to happen. And I knew it could turn out to the negative side, because I'd read Gopi Krishna, that slide I showed you earlier about the mad lovers of God. I'd read about Gopi Krishna's experience and how it took him several years of almost neurotic, psychotic kind of wavering before he could pull out of it. And I knew it could go bad, but it could be very good. Whatever it was going to happen. And all I could think of was to say, Jesus be with me. You see, that came back from my childhood. So like Ghostbusters, who are you going to call? You know, it's like when chips are down, who are you going to call? And it was like, Jesus be with me. And said that prayer, and it gets up to here, and there's the flash of light, just like you see in a lot of the texts and stuff. And maybe I had this kind of experience because I'd read these things, and that's what I was expecting, because not everybody has these kind of experiences when they have the Kundalini. So let's be clear. For some people, it is very gentle, and it comes out in different ways because we're all individuals, and that's the way it is, and that's fine. But for me, it was a very dramatic, powerful thing. And once the flash of brilliant light, I got up out of my body, and some part of me was directing this. It wasn't me consciously trying to do any of this. Out of my body, went around to the end of the bed, and there I was lying on the bed. My wife's body was there. I could see them both. And then I just kind of dove back into my body. Some part of me wanted to show me that I could do that. I wasn't trying to do it. Wow. You know, and I was sort of, it's like the big time, Kundalini. I could hardly, you know, it's one of those things. You have those experiences, and you're not the same anymore. You've had that. And this whole tradition becomes real to me, this whole process, this whole mystical, yogi, kundalini sort of thing. And so that really motivates you to keep doing it, of course. The second one, a very similar experience, meditation at 2 o'clock. This was a few months later. The thing that happened in between was that I fell down a stairwell and crushed my spine. And it's part of the story I don't have enough time to go into, but it was all in my dreams. The voice told me ahead of time it was going to happen. But I had this accident that changed my career in one day. It's fascinating because I was in graduate school at the time doing my master's program in clinical psychology. And my wife could tell I was ready to get out of construction and really anxious to change careers. But yet I had about almost a year left in the program. She said, how much longer do you think you can that you can stay in construction? I said, oh, about a week. This is a Monday. Like on Wednesday, I have this accident. I'm out on a construction job and working on this huge house for this fellow, and I'm having a hard time with him because he is just being obnoxious, and I think he's enjoying being obnoxious. He's leaving me little post-it notes. Before there were post-its, they were taking a little piece of paper and stick them onto a stud wall and, you know, and criticize something or just to be obnoxious. And some of the stuff he said was just good feedback, but the way he was doing it was just really, I thought, terrible. So I was standing there cussing him out in my mind, and the voice comes on and says, you know you can't have that kind of stuff going on in your mind without meeting it. I've come to hear this different kinds of voices, so I'll tell you about my voices in a minute, but this is one of the voices. It's one of those voices you know you've been spoken to. It's coming from somewhere with authority. It wasn't a condemning thing. It was just let me know I'd cross some kind of line and be just, again, sort of like with the premonition with the fire. Just be forewarned, something's going to happen, you know. Ooh. So, you know, immediately prayers of forgiveness and, you know, all of that sort of thing. Like, didn't really mean it, okay. Well, a few hours later, as we're getting ready to put our tools up, we'd uncovered a stairwell, getting ready to go up to the next level. And basically, I fall down the stairwell. And I'm holding a framing square in my hand, and all the circumstances of the person whose job site we were on and everything, it was in my dream journals from about 3 to 4 months before. All of the symbology there, of course, it was put in a form that I couldn't probably avoid it very easily, but when looking back, it was clear that that's what that was. I'd planned this 3 to 4 months before, apparently at some level. And Casey said, nothing of significance happens in our lives that we don't dream about first. And I've come to recognize that. But the point of the story is there was a kind of a mystical aspect of that in terms of premonition and something going on. But basically, it got me out of construction immediately, but I was stuck in a situation where I had to carry on with my brother, who was in construction, still had the business. And in the healing process, I was called upon to go beyond myself to help him in a way that was a sacrifice for me. And what I realized also about that first awakening that I told you about, why did I meditate for all those years and then finally this energy comes up? And looking back, I realized what it was. At the time, I was just starting graduate school and I had a construction business going, and my little daughter, who was just probably 3 or 4 at the time, she was starting to become pretty crabby and ornery, and that's not the way she normally is. And instead of just thinking that she was having a problem, I did actually reflect within myself and I realized that she was wanting Dad's attention. And that's when I made that adjustment and put her into my life to spend time with doing what she was doing. That's when the Kundalini came up. In the book of Revelation, it talks about the Lamb that is slain. Who is worthy to open these seals and lock this energy? The Lamb that is slain. And I've come to recognize, for me, the opening and using of this energy has to do with sacrifice, that sacrificial aspect of setting myself aside, and that's what opens these centers. And that the next experience I had was my brother was the one that I had this relationship with that I had to heal in some way, and I set myself aside, and the Kundalini comes back up. Now this time, it's the same thing. I'm meditating at 2 o'clock. Why I don't get this when I'm meditating, I don't know, but I go back to bed, and I'm lying there, and within a couple of minutes, here it comes up the spine. But it's not quite as powerful as it was the first time. Still static electricity and the rumbling and roaring and so forth and coming up. And I still say the prayer of protection, but this time I'm a little more excited about it too. A little bit of apprehension, but I'm mostly excited. Get the flash of light, but I don't go out of body. But I know I can go out of body, so I go ahead and will myself out, and there I am. And basically I'm kind of a chicken at heart. I mean, I'm a cautious person. I don't know if you pick, I may not sound that way, but I am a pretty cautious person. I could go wandering off in these other realms, but I've read Robert Monroe, and so no thanks. This is close enough. Thank you. Wonderful experience back in my body. And so I've had, having those experiences, what I found was that my life changed. And I started doing things that I couldn't do before. Gopi Krishna had described the same thing in terms of writing a lot of books. I mean, he was basically a clerk or something, kind of a menial kind of job before this Kundalini awakening. And once you got those energies squared around, the creative energies, the creative forces, it puts you in another track if you can do it constructively. Otherwise, it might lead you off in destructive ways if you get self-indulgent about it. But what I've tried to do is work with this in the process that I've described. What I'm telling you about here in this Casey's process of these steps to keep the energy on track, that's what I've tried to do. And when I'm able to do that, I have much better success in working with these energies. And so that's why I'm recommending it to you, because it's worked for me. And the self-awareness of the energies so that they don't get out of bounds is very important. Now, with regard to some of these other manifestations, like the hearing of voices, I'm working as a professional in the mental health system, particularly in working with some of this. How do you do that, and how do you relate your experiences to somebody else in an appropriate way so that you don't cause them to go out in the deeper waters if they're already out there drowning? And what I found was that over time, if you build a relationship with someone like this, you can appropriately share your experiences and put it in the context of mysticism and this historical tradition of the perennial philosophy. So as they can get a sense of, if they're hearing voices doing these things, like Edgar Cayce says, you're probably closer to the divine than we are, but if it's out of balance, if it's awry, you can't function, that's what makes it an illness. Because I may share about some of my voices or whatever, and they'll say, well, how come you don't have to take medication for your voices? You know, good question. Well, why? I come back to the level of functioning thing. And I say, yeah, but I'm working a job, I have a family, I have relationships, I have recreation, I have all these things going for me that's on that scale in the psychiatric manual. My level of functioning is pretty high. And it's probably because of having these experiences is a little higher. So how can we help you to function better? You know, if you could do all these things and function, you could go to your psychiatrist. Maybe they'd lower your medication or eventually eliminate your medication. If you could work and get along with other people and take care of yourself and not violate the law and do these various things, if you could increase your level of functioning high enough, you wouldn't need medications. So how can we, let's work on a treatment plan for you to see if we can increase your level of functioning. See, that's a practical sort of way. And in explaining the voices, I have to be a little careful because it sounds pretty crazy, doesn't it, hearing voices? Did anybody hear voices of any kind sometimes? Because there's all kinds of voices. And one of the distinctions here is that in most cases, I've never heard a voice outside myself. The voices that I hear are pretty much within myself of one sort or another. Because one of the common things in psychotic disorders is the voice is coming from out there. Might be coming from like a television or a radio when they're turned off. Okay? We all hear it when they're turned on. Might be coming from a heat register, a light bulb, something like that. Or it may just be coming out of thin air. I've never heard those kind of that voices in that sense. But the voice, the still small voice within, most of us have heard that once in a while, the still, and Casey encourages us to listen to that still small voice. The other kind of voices I've heard are like the voice I told you about when I fell right before I fell down the stairwell. It's kind of a knowing voice that's an authority, but it's never dictating, it's never demanding, it's never intrusive, because then you start to get into that boundary issues and what's going on, because sometimes with psychotic disorders, those voices do become very demanding or telling you have to do something, you know, you have to, I'm on a mission from God sort of thing, and people feel torn, is this God telling me to do something or not? And I've never had those. And so I'd be careful of those kind of voices if it has that quality, because we don't treat each other that way and God doesn't treat us that way. Keep that in mind. But sometimes the knowing voice, sometimes the voices can be a little bit on the humorous side, or almost like what Jung called the trickster archetype. Sometimes I get this voice that's kind of an Old Testament God talking to Moses kind of voice, that deep kind of voice. I've had it in my dreams when I've had reincarnational dreams, and the voice would come on and tell me she was your daughter, you know, in terms of in the French incarnation or whatever, and explain something to me. And for a period of time I was dreaming numbers, and it occurred to me I might be dreaming lottery numbers. And so one night I dreamt four numbers that I remembered, and I got up the next day, and my wife played the Illinois lottery at the time. And she said, and I told her, you know, Debbie, I've got four numbers here. There's a pick five. Why don't you make up another number and play these numbers and see what happens? And she was sort of an agnostic about the whole thing. And, you know, she thought I was probably kind of off the deep end, which maybe I was, you know. For whatever reason, for that particular week, she forgot to play the lottery. And she was playing it consistently. Maybe it was a resistance on her part. I don't know. But guess what? If she had played those numbers, those four that I gave her would have hit, and she would have made a couple $1,000. So guess what? She went from being an agnostic to a true believer, at least in terms of dreaming numbers for lottery. And she kept saying, you know, dream me some more numbers, dream me some more numbers. I couldn't dream any more numbers. I tried. I couldn't dream any more numbers. But a few months later, we came out here to Virginia Beach, and I was staying over at my cousin's house in Norfolk there. And we were in a kind of a strange, you know, different setting, different bedroom. And my wife is definitely a night person, not a morning person. She would sleep in every morning if she could. I'm the opposite. I'm, you know, go to bed with the chickens, wake up with the chickens sort of thing, wake up early. So I'm lying here in bed. We're in this strange bedroom. It's pretty early in the morning, and I'm just starting to come into consciousness. And the voice comes on. And the voice says, and Mrs. McMillan's numbers are, and starts giving me numbers. And I get a number, and I get another number. And by that time, it's sort of like that Kundalini experience I told you about earlier, how you start to come into conscious. I'm getting numbers here. Wow! So the third number is kind of blurry a little bit, because I'm becoming more conscious. I'm not in that unconscious state so much. So I think, well, what was that third number? I'm just going to guess it's so-and-so. I figure that's the best way when you don't know. Just, what is it? And guess and go with it. So I kind of quietly, so as not to lose it, I said, Debbie, I just dreamed some lottery numbers. Get a pencil and piece of paper. And out of her deep sleep, she's up in bed like this, fully awake, scrambling around, trying to find her purse to get a piece of paper and write it down. And she writes down the numbers as I give them to her. And we go downstairs, and I ask about the Virginia lottery. And sure enough, there's a pick three. We go buy the ticket at the 7-Eleven. And the next day, the first two numbers are right on. The third number missed by one digit, the number that I made up. And so, again, the voices can be of all sorts, and sometimes they can be almost like playing little tricks on you or whatever. Or maybe I played a trick on myself, who knows. But all different kinds. This stuff can be, it's the richness in my life. The mystical experiences give color and depth and energy to my life. It's the most precious part of my life, in a way, in conjunction with my family. You know, it's part of my family as well, sharing dreams and sharing these experiences, has changed my family life, but it's a very important part of my journey. So when I talk about this whole process of mental health and mental illness and mysticism and madness, I want you to get a sense of where I'm coming from with it. That basically we are souls making our way through eternity. And yes, we are in a material realm, but there's more than just the material realm. I'm preaching to the choir here, I know. But that in this journey, as we work with these energies and we have these experiences, let's stay grounded. Let's use it as a growth experience. Let's use it to help others. And when we see others along the way who have gotten more out of balance, let's be empathic with them. Let's not make it a stigma thing. And if we can do something to help them to be more in balance and not to fear them or whatever for what they're experiencing, and maybe even learn from them, and maybe even at times see them as our healers, the gift that they have to give to us. And let's keep the balance ourselves. Let's stay on the healthy side of that line in terms of level of functioning. And hopefully with some of the research we're doing in through Meridian Institute and some of our projects, the model that Edgar Cayce provided for some of these mental diseases, which are just an imbalance of natural processes for the most part. They're mostly just, almost anything you look at as a psychiatric illness is just an imbalance of some natural process. As I said earlier, grieving is a natural part of when you have a loss. It's only when it's inappropriate and out of balance that it becomes depression, it becomes pathological. Anxiety, it's natural to be fearful. There are times when life can be scary, and we need that to energize us so we stay out of trouble and we protect ourselves and we do things. So anxiety, even anxiety, it has its natural place in fear. Fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom, the Bible tells us. So fear and anxiety, there's a natural place for it that can help us. But when it gets out of balance or it's inappropriate, that's when it becomes an illness. And even psychosis is part of our soul's journey in terms of if psychosis is being out of touch with this reality and being in touch with the spiritual realms and so forth, we need that as part of our soul's journey. It's a natural part of life, the mystical experiences, and it feeds our soul. And there's something missing. We're not total if we don't have it. Yet, if it gets out of balance, it becomes an illness. And that's what I've described. When it gets out of balance, I've described those in terms of mental diseases, but they're just imbalance. So let's keep a balance as we go on the path, and let's help others to be in balance.